All right, here we go. Another week in the metaverse with all the crazy news that is happening, and there's plenty to talk about this week. So we are going to dive into this new AR virtual pet game, which I've been banging on about virtual pets in the age of AI and companions for a while. This is pretty good. It's from the creators of Pokemon Go. So it's a new kind of AR pet game that uses AI to recognize things in the real world. I'm quite excited about it. I think it looks good, even though it's definitely for children, but still. Also, motion capture is becoming even easier to do with Rococo's latest release, and they make motion capture suits that are quite affordable, but they have released something recently, which is really interesting. And that is the sort of trends that's coming to everyday people being able to kind of motion capture stuff. So we'll get into that. There was a bit of controversy this week. It's not like a week's go past in this space without a bit of drama. Mr. Beast made an announcement about this interesting gaming competition, which involved 8 other influencers. Mr. Beast wasn't involved himself, but was announced it because he had Feastables as part of it. The whole thing basically got pulled because there was a mention of blockchain, which they didn't exclusively disclose. So it's interesting. Plenty to chat about there. Nintendo might be making a VR headset. And lots more. So it's a good week. There's loads in this episode. Shall we get into this story then, all about a new AR pet game called Peridot from the creators of Pokemon Go. So I think this is a big trend we'll see. I feel like there's going to be, in the next wave, virtual pets plus AI plus companionship, whether there's NFTs involved in that and ownership. I just feel like there's something like that coming. Anyway, this one is cool. And you basically have a virtual pet, which is kind of nothing new. But the cool thing about this is that you can go out and about into the real world with your pet, and your pet recognizes real world environments. So I watched a video of somebody using it. And one of the goals that you have to achieve within the sort of gamified virtual pet ownership is to meet another human. So their pet was trotting along the street, bumped into another human, and then that ticked off their kind of achievements of like meeting a human. And the pet actually kind of recognized there was somebody there. They then went to the park, and there was a load of dogs there. And obviously the AI system is able to recognize dogs, and the pet got scared because there was dogs around there and it had never experienced dogs before. So it's this kind of next evolution of this idea. You can also bump into other people who have one of these pets, and you can breed with them, and the genetics are kind of 100% unique because you've met someone else. So it's pretty interesting for a couple of reasons. Mainly the sort of evolution of this with AI in the real world is really cool, but also that it's within TikTok itself. And we can go through some of the kind of gaming content stats on TikTok, but I like this, and I think it's a sign of things to come of all of these technologies kind of coming together in something that's pretty unique. So what were your first thoughts?
Yeah, this is big, isn't it? Whether this game takes off or not, it doesn't really matter, because you're kind of combining two things that are monstrous already. One is obviously the Pokemon Go meta, which is, you know, that game is still big. I still get messages every day because my kids are still playing it from Pokemon Go. The idea of being able to capture things in the real world. The world is your sandbox, just to go anywhere, be anywhere, do anything. It's very interesting that we've had Starfield come out this week, and people's mixed reactions to Starfield, that it's just too goddamn big, that the world is enough, and that a massive universe of planets and traveling around is too much, and it's actually baffling for people. But being able to explore your own environment, interact with it, and then create these more sophisticated interactions, amazing. But it's the bit that goes alongside it, which is TikTok. So it's a TikTok partnership, and the blurb is kind of interesting. So TikTok says that they're excited to announce that they partnered with Niantic to be the exclusive promotional platform for the launch of Peridot. As an exclusive partner, TikTok is working with Niantic to enhance the Peridot experience for the TikTok community with a campaign strategy that leverages both unique ad solutions as well as organic content strategies. So obviously they're going to just fire ads at people in between TikToks. I don't know how effective that strategy is, because I don't know how effective ads on short form are anyway. My instinct is that it's pretty minimal. But what it has done is it's opened up this idea of trends, what's trending on TikTok, how can they loop into the things that, you know, on the For You page. And I mean, look, the problem with these things is, and I'm going to demonstrate for you. If you're listening on the podcast, I really apologize, because this is hard to explain in any other way than visually. This is responsible for some of the cringiest content I have ever seen on TikTok. I mean, beyond cringy, because it looks like this. You have a person, they're wandering around. What are they going to do? Hold up their phone and then elicit an emotion, joy, surprise, delight at something that is happening on their phone, but they're going to fake it for the sake of the content. Yeah. And it looks like this.
just random expressions.
Now, the reason I know this is because I have shot like literally hundreds of commercials for consumer products that have an app attached. So you've got your robot vacuum cleaner. It goes around your house. It cleans up. It has an app attached. When you film these things, this is what you do. Take a shot of the phone. Take a shot of the app on the phone. And then what they want is an emotion of delight, surprise, wonderment. How incredible is this thing? And this is what you get. It's always that. And this on TikTok's page, there is this creator, Alain Bouy, just horrified. It's so cringe. It's so cringe. Yeah, I can't stand it. I can't stand it. Yes.
But the kids who watch these adverts love it because it just shows the possible delight that you could have. And yeah, I do think this is going to be a big deal. Here's some fun TikTok stats. In 2022, gaming content generated over 3 trillion video views. I mean, that is a broad term, gaming content, but on TikTok globally, with 50% of daily active users viewing some form of gaming content throughout the year. We're just seeing this trend. I read a good tweet thread the other day about like gaming going through another renaissance. Like, it's nothing new. We've talked about it a lot, but it's like, it is, if you look at that kind of adoption curve of technology, it's crossed into like mainstream full culture now. Like, parents have been kind of fully initiated through Roblox and everything else, and their kids kind of, it's just the way that kids are consuming content.
But I tell you what it is as well, because I'm in it right now. It's education. So kids are learning through play, and they're learning through tablets at school, and they bring that home with them. And then there's a sort of gamified version of education that's popping up. And like, I think learning and schooling is going to be quite heavily transformed. I mean, obviously by AI, but also by metaverse, interactive AR, all these things. They have a huge potential to disrupt, enhance, improve, radicalize. I don't know. Like, education really feels like it's on the precipice of a massive sea change. And we know, and I know, because we're going through this with my own kids at the moment. Like, there's just a richer, more interesting, different version of education that they could be experiencing. It doesn't necessarily need to be facilitated by technology, but as parents, we also have to plug back into that, and I have to be mindful of that and knowledgeable about that. And of course, like, you know, as our devices become more and more gamified, our world experiences become more gamified. You can't go to the museum. You can't go to a museum now without there being like a Roblox experience attached to it, or some kind of app and AR and all this kind of stuff. It is like, actually, you know what? I just want to see the dinosaur. That's enough.
Yeah, like, that would be the other case. But sometimes you want to get away from that. But that is the big trend, isn't it? And like, to go even really back to basics, like, I've read some good stuff on how, you know, gamifying and play in general is how we learn in the very first instance. Like, as a baby, peekaboo is like a game you play. Like, everything really, it is gamified. I listened also to a good documentary on LARPing, live action role play. There's a school, I think it's in Sweden, who teach most of their lessons through basically kind of live action role play of different scenarios, and everyone has a different role, a bit like Starfield, this PS5 game, PC game that came out recently or whatever on those platforms. But this whole kind of, they'll set up a scenario where maybe you're on a space mission and you have to kind of do the mass elements to make sure the ship is in going in the right direction at the right speed. And that to me is really interesting. I think I would have learned probably or be much more engaged to learn in that kind of environment. It's not maybe for everybody, but it's interesting.
I know my daughter talks about this game she plays in Roblox where they sit down in class and do lessons. I'm like, I'm so what? You sit down voluntarily in a virtual game to do lessons? Like, what does this do? Like, I guess they get rewarded. I did have an idea though. I know you're like all over Grand Theft Auto RP. Why don't we establish an educational facility, an academy within Grand Theft Auto? Like, that should be our mission, to just be the first school of GTA. And like, it could just be a full LARPing university. The Franks Academy. I like it. I think it's got something.
Yeah, as long as the schooling was probably something ridiculous, or like, I need to work out what I teach, but yeah, there's something there. What could I add to society? Not sure. Still working that out. But yeah, it's interesting. So it's called Peridot. It's a separate app, but TikTok are all over it. So worth downloading. Maybe if you've got kids, they'll probably like it. And you can just see how these technologies are kind of all coming together. And that's really powerful when they do come together and they work. The fact that a pet can recognize stuff in the real world is really cool to watch.
Well, you put down the notes that this is like the return of Tamagotchis. And most people probably don't remember Tamagotchis, little digital pets. They kind of still exist in a weird form. But yeah, I mean, these things, they keep coming back, like weird echoes of toys that we grew up with or that were hot when we were younger now have this kind of more sophisticated counterpart that can do a lot more. And the essential appeal of all of those things hasn't changed. I am starting to see, I don't know if you are, but I'm starting to see like the AR narrative just bubbling up a lot more than it has been. I think the VR narrative is still sort of there. We're waiting for the Meta Quest 3 to come out. And there are some interesting headsets, which I think you're going to pick up as well. But AR, Vision Pro, I think it's going to see a sort of explosion of weird experiments and weird things coming along as people try and take advantage of it. But I think it's definitely something to just keep an eye on. As we flounder our way through whatever this metaverse thing is.
Yeah, for sure. You see a lot of patterns with like all sorts of technology of, you know, it always starts with like novelty and it's like interesting, but a bit pointless. Like it doesn't add anything to your life generally is how most technological shifts happen. And AR has been in that phase. That's been where it is. And it's starting, I think, to move into the next phase, which is like, oh, actually, this is really cool. And you see there's been a few kind of virtual gig type things where like people have been performing streets, and then you can see how the whole physical world is going to have gamified elements mapped on top of it. I've seen like videos of like Skittles games on top of landmarks where you have to kind of throw a ball onto the top of a, you know, a landmark in a city and all the Skittles fall off the top. All of those things are coming, and that's going to be interesting and fun, I think, and also for marketing and for businesses, it's a really fresh way of doing stuff.
Yeah, it's a question of like, it's fun, but then what? It's fun, but does that build anything else? And like, maybe it doesn't matter. Like, digital activations, digital campaigns can be like that, and that's fine. As long as you get your column inches, as long as you get your engagement metrics and everything kind of, you know, feels better than it would be doing other things. I mean, there's definitely a new digital frontier to be explored here. And I know creative agencies are working very hard to try and figure out what those experiences are and how to make them bigger. But like, I was just reminded, I made an AR game for big Dutch bank called ABN AMRO a while back, like 5-6 years ago, and that the engagement was really cool and it was a really fun experience. It was this sort of heist thing. We had to shoot these kind of weird little 24 like sequences with people going, my gosh, the terrorists are in the building now, you need to make sure you get this thing there. And it was really, really fun, but you wonder what the long tail of all these things is always.
Yeah, you can see like the obvious thing is to walk past the Disney store, and because you've got the Disney app and they know who you are, Mickey Mouse comes out and it's like, hi, Luke in AR, and starts, trying to come and see what's inside this store? And then like, okay, well, suddenly then people are coming in, and you know, those kinds of things will, as the technologies collide, but we're a little way off that still, but you can see how it's probably.
Yeah, and then you become like Michael Douglas in Falling Down and you go apeshit and start punching Mickey because you just don't want that in your life at this point in time.
Oh, I look forward to that. Nice. Okay. Next story then is also with Rococo. Now, Rococo are a really cool company, I think. They make smart suits, motion capture suits that are in the pretty affordable range, sort of $3,000, maybe a little bit more for the full kind of suits that you can wear. And then, you can have really great motion capture at home for people who are into that and playing with characters and want to make various sequences and stuff like that. They also make great content about motion capture as well, and kind of VTubers, and they've got some good series online. So there, I think where a lot of people's journey into motion capture starts is often with them. They have a few products. They have their smart suits, which is like their top offering, meaning that you can capture really accurate motion capture data and there's not too much cleanup. We can talk about what any of that means. And then there is also their AI version, which I think is called Rococo Vision, which is with webcams, which is a great way to start if you just want to play with motion capture, and it's free. So it's not perfect, but it's pretty good if you are on that journey and you want to have a go for free. You can experiment with a lot of cool stuff. And now their latest addition is to do with kind of the motion capture gloves. It's called the Coil Pro, which is a strange name because, yeah, I think that refers to something else.
Because Luke struggles to wrestle with the concept of feminine hygiene products and what he can and cannot say.
That was my first thought. It was like contraception. Is that weird? That was my first thought. It's like the coil. Strange. Anyway, you know all about motion capture because you've been doing it at Based the whole time. So what do you think about this? I've got a few questions once maybe you've explained the challenges with all of this.
Oh, okay. Well, I can explain kind of where we're at with all of this, because, I mean, basically you've got this hierarchy of motion capture solutions. You've got optical motion capture, which is where you've got tons of cameras around you and you wear little ping pong balls on your suit. And that is an incredibly effective system for doing certain types of mocap. One of the key things that it can do is it can pinpoint fingers very accurately. So you can get your fingers to intersect with each other. And we did a test where we had two people clapping hands like that, and it tracks you perfectly, and it is extremely accurate. And one of the most important things that it does is it doesn't drift over time. And the other really important thing is that when your feet hit the ground, they don't drift, they don't slide, they just land where they land. And that, believe it or not, is one of the hardest things to pull off in mocap. But those optical systems, they are extremely expensive and they are very labor intensive. And there's quite a lot of engineering and thinking that has to go into to kind of making them work for you. They don't just work out of the box either. There's calibrations, all this stuff. So there've been these simpler, cheaper solutions to optical mocap, which have come up. One is made by Movella. It's called the X-Sense suit. And that has been for the longest time a kind of prosumer, that's probably the right word, version of motion capture. And that uses inertial sensors. So the same thing that you have in your phone that enables you to understand whether it's up or down or which way it's pointing, similar kind of system. And those inertial suits are very good at understanding where they are relative to each other, but not so good at understanding where they are relative to a fixed point in space, i.e. the ground. So they drift. And over time, they lose the connection to where they are because all they're doing is referring to each other and they have no anchor point. And that's the amazing thing about the optical system is it has always got this specific world origin point in the volume. So X-Sense suits are quite expensive. They don't tell you how much they are on the website. We've had quotes for them, 10,000, 15,000. I mean, it sort of moves around depending on what you're trying to do. And there's simpler versions of the suit, which are just straps that you put on key parts, and they'll track sort of basically what you need. And then Rococo was the next level down. And so Rococo have basically what look like these flight suits, and you've got lots of batteries and you've got sensors around you everywhere. Rococo is amazing. They are a fantastic company doing really awesome things, and they're building some really fun tools for creating motion capture solutions. But it's not cheap. The suit itself, I think the Smart Suit Pro 2, when I got one, was $4,000. The gloves themselves are more on top of that. But what they have done now is they've built this system called the Coil. And effectively what it is a black cube, and it creates a field around the space that you're working within that enables it to create this world origin, basically to allow the suit itself and the hands, everything, to understand where they are, not just in relation to each other, but in relation to a world origin. That's a big deal because it means you can do more sophisticated mocap with it. I looked at the demo and I saw some problems with it because the big headline is no drift. And literally as the guy's doing this incredible demo where he puts a cursor on the screen and then he touches where that cursor is with his finger. And 5 minutes later, he can still touch the cursor. But as he's doing this, he's talking, you see his feet going, and it's like, I mean, we saw it instantly. I showed it to the guys at the office here and we're like, yeah, we saw it instantly because we know there is a thing. And it's so hard to explain to anybody who hasn't actually done it. But when you are in a mocap suit in the volume and you are looking at what's being projected back to you through a digital character, the best way I can describe it is like if you have audio and video and the audio is slightly out of sync, it just doesn't feel right. It doesn't land right. And when we dial that optical motion capture volume in right, everything that I do, the nuances, the subtleties, everything else is translated perfectly to the character. And you have this sense of being completely in sync with that character. It's so hard to explain, but when it's right, it's incredible. And when it's not right, it's just so annoying. And there are so many things that get in the way of that. And there are some advantages to having a suit like the Rococo one or the X-Sense one. Because with optical motion capture, you have this issue called occlusion, which is there are, you know, we have 20 cameras around the room, and I'm hoping that we'll be able to get like a few more to up the resolution and the coverage. But at certain points, you block the markers and the system can't see them. And so what it does is it guesses and you get these weird things going on. So like often, because hands are quite hard to track, you'll find my arm just flip around like that. Now you can get annoyed about this, or you can build it in as part of the fun way that we do metaverse content. So often now we just lean into it, like, oh, my arm's gone weird. And it's like, well, that's just what happens in the metaverse. But occlusion is a bit of a problem there. You don't get occlusion with Rococo suits or X-Sense suits because they're not optical. So there's nothing to occlude. They're just moving in relation to each other. So I definitely see that there's room for a system like this. And we're actually thinking very carefully about how we could use this in certain situations. So for instance, if I was streaming as a digital character, it makes no sense to be in an optical motion capture suit because most of me would be blocked by a desk or by other things. So it makes much more sense for me to be in an inertial suit like the X-Sense one or the Rococo one. So we're definitely exploring how we could use it. And the coil would give you more confidence that if you were streaming for like a couple of hours, you would stay where you were supposed to be and you wouldn't get that weird drift. Hopefully that sort of explains it to you. But like, yeah, much love for Rococo. And I think any company, so that there's the Sony Mokopi solution as well, which is even cheaper. I forget how much it is, like $400 or something, but you get these little colored discs that go on the kind of key parts of you. And the good thing about that is you can record anywhere, you can be outside, you can send it directly to an app. And I think it's very clearly this is directed at kind of casual content creators on TikTok or something like that, who could just be a digital character and dance as that character and just have a lot of fun doing it. But you can see how Rococo's possible market is getting eaten by AI. The ability to just, you know, with something like Wonder Dynamics, just spit out a 3D character, and which doesn't have to be perfect, but it's just taking video and translating it into motion capture. Like all of these things, they're good to a point, but if you want that real kind of just one-to-one performance, what you did is reflected by the character and all the nuance, all the subtlety of that. As someone that does it every day now, I can tell you that I know when it's right. I know when it feels like I'm connected to this character. And then you start to kind of really sync up with what you can do with it, and you're not fighting it. And when you're fighting the character, it's just the worst. We spend hours and hours and hours just out of sync. Like a hip bone is just not working properly and the retargeting is not working properly. And it's frustrating, but there are moments, and we had a moment yesterday when it's just like, it's magical. It's incredible. And you feel like you can really start to explore all the other stuff that being in a game engine allows you to do and all the other weird stuff that you can come up with. And like, yeah, it's really fun.
Yeah, that's very well explained of the landscape of motion capture. My next question is, because I'm always thinking with this podcast, often most of you listening are, you know, thinking about how this can apply to your business or how is this kind of useful to me? And there's a whole like range of solutions here. So obviously if you're very in this industry, you're going to want the highest caliber of stuff. Where are the kind of the opportunities? Because I played with motion capture, and there's the Rococo Vision is the AI system. There's other ones that are pretty good in terms of just capturing your body. Wonder Dynamics is amazing, where you, like say, shoot a video and then you can add a character. And I do have some ideas of how this could be really fun, but like for most people, it's like, oh, you do all this stuff and you know, you go through a bit of a process to capture your motion and put it in a character. And that's really cool to see this character's dancing or moving as you did or whatever. And then it's like, then what? Like, why? Like, what do you think are the opportunities here for understanding motion capture for maybe the average business? Is it to put out more interesting content, perhaps? Is it to exist in a world that their competitors can't? Or what would you say is like?
Okay, so there's a few different things. Obviously, we have an idea about what we think we can do with this, and that is to think about it as reality TV. So what I've been trying to do is run as fast as I can towards this idea of unscripted animation. So taking digital characters in digital worlds and not planning a shoot and just going in a volume and improvising and seeing what we can come up with. Taking the MTV early approach of like, you know, shows like Jackass or whatever, but the reality TV approach to things, which I feel can inject a fresh perspective or interest into formats that are still relevant, still interesting, but where no one's ever done that before. And there's a couple of reasons why I would do this. There's a game out right now called Off the Grid, although it's not actually released yet. And it got absolutely savage when they released their gameplay trailer. But one of the key kind of components of it is they have these characters who sort of come across like influencers. They vlog from within the world. And for me, if I can take a world build that a company, you know, for a game, and act as if I'm a vlogger that's just turned up in this world and is just wandering around. So we're sort of marrying the idiom of social media and TikTok and all these other sort of things, but we're putting them into game worlds in a way that can be shot as off the cuff and extemporaneously as, you know, any TikTok. That's really, really interesting. And I've got some stats for you, Mr. Franks. So you brought this up back when the YouTube Trends report came out. I think it was earlier in the year. And VTubers, so these are virtual tubers, are getting over 1.5 billion views per month. It was one of the kind of key hot trends on YouTube. And this is expected to grow by quite a lot. So there's a market size of $4.6 billion, which is expected to grow 26% by 2025. Virtual influencers show great potential for brands. So this is from Territory Influencers, a report about that. And in that same report, they said in 2022, 35% of consumers purchased a product and service promoted by virtual influencers, with 40% of them being Gen Z and millennials. And I suspect as a if you're a Western listener, you'd be wondering, like, how is this happening, and the answer is it's happening in Asia. So in Asia you have bands like KDA, you have bands like Maeve, K-pop bands that are fully virtual, completely virtual. You have characters, VTubers who are selling products, and it's totally fine. People are very, very, very comfortable with that. We haven't seen that so much in the Western side of things, but it's coming. It's coming. And we've been talking about Kwebbelkop, this Dutch gaming streamer who's built an AI version of himself. I suspect this is going to grow like really big. What this means to brands, I don't know. It probably means that you need to partner up with a virtual influencer that can do certain things virtually. But what you do have to realize is that this is hard to pull off at scale. It's hard to pull off unless you are just a figure in this sort of box here. And like what we've been trying to do with the optical mocap volume is free up the feet. You know, when we're talking about the Rococo, the feet drift, it's so off-putting. It's so just not fun to watch. But if you watch our Cribs episode, you see like my feet land and I'm racing around all over the place. The camera's mobile. We're extremely free to explore the world that we're in, even though we're in a very small square of foam matting in the studio here. We can still be pretty free, and I'm hoping that we can expand that even further. But this idea of virtual vloggers, people who can explore virtual worlds freely and just go around and see stuff and explore it and talk viewers through it, for me that's where this gets pretty interesting. So for brands, it sort of opens up possibilities for influencers to really be a voice or a point of entry for people into spaces that they've created in ways that go beyond gameplay.
Yeah, there really one really smart idea, which is basically what you did with the MKBHD video, the massive tech YouTuber, Marques Brownlee. If you don't know, he's got 15 million subscribers, and we've talked about it on the show. You built his studio, which he shows on his channel, in Fortnite as a playable environment, but then also... because you built it from scratch, you can then go and you explore it in motion capture and do an MTV Cribs style tour, virtual tour of his real life studio that's been rebuilt, if everybody follows that. But as Fortnite becomes this big platform where they are paying out lots of money, if you have a game that is getting people engaged and getting people coming back, if you've got that environment, okay, you can do, and then you can do motion capture stuff in it, you can see how that can become a really lucrative potential thing, because you can make videos that go on TikTok about the game world you're in, and also if you're selling skins or other things potentially in those games and things like that, or you're getting the payout from just keeping people in there, you can see how there's this sort of new economy that's happening. And that's how being able to explore those virtual environments for a brand like Nike did the kind of Euphoria, I think, was their Fortnite level. If people could jump in there, a big influencer could go virtually and go explore that world and make content within that world from all these different places. Like, you know, no longer instead of just shooting one YouTube video in your room, you could go to Euphoria and jump off a thing and ride a train and do cool videos there. Like, that's okay. Here's a whole new realm of possible content. That's possible because you've done it, but we're right at the beginning of that sort of trend, I think.
Yeah, it's, I mean, look, we know that the media landscape is saturated with casual content creators, and it's very, very difficult to stand out these days. And you have to kind of lean on a few different things that you have at your disposal. One should be your personality, how you do things. It could be a skill set. It could be any number of these things. And I guess for me, my insight was this, that gaming footage always tends to look the same. Fortnite footage always tends to look the same. The Fortnite content always tends to look the same because everyone's leaning into the same IP and using it in pretty much the same way. Some of it is a little bit more innovative, but what we're trying to do is attack the problem from a completely different side, which is, can we make a TV show that is based around Fortnite and UEFN and these components, but just do it from a completely different context? So what Cribs did was it showed you the world of rappers, famous people, celebrities, in a very different way. So you were seeing these environments, these artifacts of celebrity or success, but just in this very intimate, strange, new way. And I think that's what I'm trying to do with this motion capture stuff and explore different ways to show these environments and hopefully build an appetite for people seeing those worlds in that way. And literally, you know, the problem we're trying to solve here is that the best made content, or the content that you might objectively look at and say, well, that's really good, doesn't often get seen or doesn't often get enough, doesn't get discovered. So how can we carve out a piece where, as tastemakers, we can say, we love this, but it's not just me playing it. I'm actually there. I'm visiting. I'm seeing it. And if we can build a brand around that, then that's something that we can actually protect and that is different and unique, and hopefully there's an appetite for it. But we'll have to see. At this point in time, it's just conjecture. But there's definitely different things that we can do with it. You were asking, though, like, once you've got mocap data, what do you do next? And that really is, that's the tough bit, because moving it into Unreal Engine and then retargeting to a digital character is pretty hard. And it's not like you just, solve it once and then it's done. Like, every time you jump in, there's always something slightly different and you have to do this and do that and fix it. It's not that straightforward. There are solutions. DNA Block is one that comes to mind that has an AI-assisted 3D avatar and animation platform attached to it. And that allows you to perform as a character in Unreal and leverage, the photorealism and all the tools that are there. But yeah, I mean, this is early days, but definitely things for people to try, experimenting with. And you don't have to be a fully fleshed out Unreal Engine character or a metahuman, because metahumans are actually quite hard to work with. You can just be a simple 2D anime avatar, using VRoid Studio or something like that. There's tons of different ways to kind of dip a toe.
Yeah, this is happening. It's still very early, but as we see more AI products come out as well, I think there will be an influx of new creators who are using. There isn't really a simple way to do this yet. So it's the tech enthusiasts who will get the benefit of being early, but yeah, it will come for sure. Good, loads of good stuff in there. Okay, let's talk about the Creator League saga that's happened this week. A bit of drama. So for the backstory of this, interestingly, Mr. Beast announced that this Creator League thing was happening, although himself wasn't directly involved with it. But essentially, there was 8 top gaming influencers, and there was big names in this list, were leading a sort of community esports tournament a whole project, really. So basically, you as a casual gamer or someone who likes to play whatever game, they're going to run a load of competitions, tournaments that you could play in, and you could buy a creator pass, which was attached to one of these top 8 creators. So you basically play on their team. And the idea was that if you had one of their passes and maybe you were really good at some of the tournaments, then you could get to interact with the influencer, or other people could vote if you should represent the whole team. And some really kind of cool, interesting ideas combining sort of gaming influencers and esports tournaments. eFuse were the platform that were kind of sort of fueling this. And they were doing you could buy the passes, to the creator passes, for $20, I think. So they're pretty reasonable. And there was no sort of mention of any NFT or blockchain stuff. You'd buy the passes in dollars. So like, on the surface, I thought this was a really cool idea. It all went a bit south when one of the influencers involved had a bit of kickback from his audience, because the passes were stored on a blockchain, on the NEO blockchain, but they weren't sellable. I assume they were soul bound. So it wasn't like you were trading these passes, but they were just using it to kind of store your passes and probably data of the tournaments and stuff like that. Anyway, it all kicked off, and basically they postponed the whole thing because they needed to rethink what happened, because everybody kicked off about the involvement of blockchain in games, because there's been a spicy history of it where traditional gamers generally think it's a way of extracting more money from them. There's the idea around like loot boxes in games, when it's a way of kind of squeezing more money out of creators, and that's the only way you can kind of participate, and they've got a bad rep. And it's really interesting because this has been a sort of ongoing conversation. Clearly it's still there. There's a real hatred for anything blockchain or NFT related in games, despite the fact that if you play something like FIFA Ultimate Team and you buy a load of packs of cards that you spend real money on, there's no way of extracting value back out to you. So in the current system, you're paying money in and getting nothing out. You might be able to swap them inside game economies and things like that, but you are paying and having no money. With an NFT, you potentially can get value out again, but also it's nuanced because a lot of that is sometimes attached to tokens that are in the real world markets. So if the markets are down, well, your value of your assets are down. So I can see it's really nuanced and interesting, but basically the fallout from this was that people aren't ready for this setup yet. I think it was a good idea, but it was kind of sad to watch it, at least for the moment, fall apart a bit. What was your analysis of this?
Well, I guess my initial hot take on all of this was that I have a real issue with this idea of not calling an NFT an NFT if it is in fact an NFT. So when Reddit was doing its collectibles, everyone was like, wow, Reddit are doing these collectibles, but they're not calling them NFTs. So they're red pilling a whole bunch of people. They've just onboarded a whole bunch of people into the ecosystem. Yeah, wow, this is how we're going to move forward. We just don't call it that. We'll just hide it underneath and no one will ever know. And that's going to be amazing. And I've always had a bit of an issue with that, because I think one of the most important things that we can do as a society is recognize when we are, when we just assume stuff and we take things for granted, because that's how governments slip regulation passes and create more and more oversight into things and overreach and these kind of things. So like the more kind of aware we are of what we're interacting with, the better it is for everybody. So if it's an NFT, say it's an NFT. Like, some people might hate it, but like, if you're going to use the technology and you've made the decision to do so, fucking own it. Like, why are you doing it otherwise? Like, if the success or failure of your company hinges on whether people will adopt it or not, then you've got to be prepared that at some point, because people are very, very good internet sleuths these days, it will surface. So what are you going to do? Now, in this instant, my initial hot take was actually incorrect, because these are not NFTs. That this is just a way of recording transactions in a censorship-free and tamper-resistant way. And you could argue that they didn't ever need to use the Near blockchain at all, but they did. And they used it in the same way that, you know, JP Morgan uses the blockchain. I mean, no one gets angry with JP Morgan for using a blockchain, but that they do, and they have their own one, and that's good for them, because it's just a way of doing a certain part of their business in a way that makes sense for them. No one has mentioned anything about the Near blockchain. Like, why did they pick Near? Not Polygon, not some of these other kind of more fated, but they picked Near. Near has a very, very solid reputation as being very scalable, very developer friendly. It's very green as well. It's one of the greenest blockchains around. No one said anything about that. They were just too busy getting angry about the fact that there was blockchain in there. And like, if Cradley made a boo-boo here, it was on a couple of different levels. One of them was they weren't transparent about the blockchain bit in there, which meant that there was, you know, there was asymmetry in terms of people's awareness of a thing. And I guess those who are instantly triggered by just even the word blockchain and can't see past the end of their nose would have just seen that and gone, no, because insert spam, scam, it's bad for the environment. All of the arguments, which we know are, for the most part, not true. But the fact is that the industry that we're in and everything around it has just pissed off gamers to the extent that the most vocal of them are, they make their feelings heard. So it is a little sad. I think there's more going on here as well. Like, the Mr. Beast connection to all of this was gauche, to be honest with you, because these creators, in their own right, as big as they were, and we're talking about some of the biggest, they should have been more than capable of promoting this thing as it was. But what Crazy League did was they I guess, paid Jimmy to put an ad for this in his latest experiments video, which was a completely batshit video, full stop. And then in the middle of it, you had this Crazy League. Jimmy's not involved with Crazy League in any other way other than sponsoring it. That ain't cheap. And what followed was Crazy League laying off 30% of its staff. Apparently that's around 30 people, which means they have a staff of 100. So they still got 70. Well done. All good. But if the bet was that big and they were gambling on a Mr. Beast brand integration to send this thing to the moon, that bit just doesn't land right for me. So there's sort of, yes, there's pluses and cons to all of this. But reading the comments on the Cradle League statement about all of this was pretty telling. Yeah, I mean, they said within the product, the blockchain provides additional transparency to inventory levels for what was designed to be a limited release. We apologize for not intentionally disclosing the blockchain's limited use within the Cradle League purchasing process and have implemented practices to ensure that doesn't happen again. It's not an NFT project and we haven't sold any tokens. So there was no speculative value in these tokens whatsoever. They use the blockchain to validate transactions in a transparent and auditable way. So that was more transparency, but they messed up because they weren't transparent enough about it. And I'll just finish off. Like, the comments from the Web3 side of thing was like, you know, pointing to gamers saying blockchain has no use case. There is no situation in which this can possibly have a place. And then here we have one, and gamers still get angry about it, even though it has none of the features that they get so triggered by in the first place. So I was like, whoopsie. Like, what do you guys want? Do you just want total annihilation of a technology that you don't understand? Or what is it that you want?
Yeah, it's the core thing is a misunderstanding, really, isn't it? And also we should say that it's not over this. I don't think they are sort of going back to think about it and then maybe it will still exist. The thing that is clearly happening is that the anger is aimed at something which has been misunderstood. Most people who are annoyed about it probably, well, they don't understand it, because if they did, they wouldn't be annoyed about it, because there's no kind of speculation or any of the things that are problematic here. But still, that in itself is a problem. That means that there's still work to be done to educate, and to, when stuff gets polarizing, where people who love blockchain are like, oh, you're all idiots, you don't understand, that's unhelpful. When gamers are like, oh, it's all like nonsense bullshit, like, but they've potentially misunderstood it, that's not helpful. And also there is some nuance, because there has been a load of bullshit as well, and there has been games that have used this with tokenomics that have just been not sustainable or have been money grabbing. So it's kind of like lots of things on the internet, multiple things are true at the same time, which generally is very hard to hold and doesn't get kind of clicks. People, things need to be completely wrong or completely right, and then there's controversy and then there's clicks. But the thing that was a shame is that I think that they backed down. I think maybe if they could have, obviously there's a lot of money at stake and there's lots of things I don't know, but I almost think they should have gone, no, it's not that, carry on. Or like release, like, I don't know, some educational stuff about it or something. Maybe that's unrealistic, but like the fact that they've now backed down is like, okay, well, we were wrong. And like, I think they could have just plowed on. I think it would have been successful. I think the crucial thing is that most people just don't care. Like, some people are annoyed about it, blockchain, blah, blah, blah. That's probably like, I don't know, 5%. Like, yes, there's some comments and whatever. Most people don't care. They want to play games with their favorite creators and maybe win some big prizes. There's some big money on offer. There is still a free to enter Fortnite tournament that's going on as well, with like a 50 grand prize. So like, sometimes it's the small minority making a lot of noise that then stops everything. I think they just carried on. 95% of people just were like, yeah, whatever, I don't care, just let me play with my favorite creator, basically, which is a shame, but that's how it's panned out.
Yeah, well, it was Seadog VA who left. He publicly said, sorry, I fucked up here. I should not have done this. So presumably he got pressure from his audience or from the people that pay his bills, because he's pretty successful, obviously, and capitulated. So he just went, I don't fancy that. I don't fancy that fight. And I can't blame him, because what comes back at you, and I've been on the end of this myself, is you don't need that in your life. Trust me, you just don't. And I have been a punching bag for gamers at various points in the last couple of years. It's not fun. It's definitely not fun. However, Mr. Seadog VA, these are your eyes. You use them to read stuff. You understand words that go in through your eyes, into your brain. You could have done a better job of reading what it was in front of you. And I wonder if the ego of being part of an 8-strong team of creator legends just kind of misted everything up a little bit and clouded your judgment to the point where you went, yeah, I'm going to be part of this, bro, because look, it's got Bella Porch in there as well, that belong in this upper echelon of creators, man. That's where I belong, yo. That's not how he talks, but that's how I imagine the voice in your head goes. There's a bit of ego in all of this. And like, if he'd said, you know, I didn't actually read it. I just like thought it'd be cool. Again, I have sympathy for creators that get into situations like this, because, you know, there's no one telling you how to do this stuff. There's very little mentorship or anything like that. And it's tough. And blockchain, very hard to understand. NFTs, very hard to understand. There's an information asymmetry all over it. And you have creators like Dan Olsen that do a 2-hour film excoriating all of this and flogging the ecosystem to death without ever providing examples of things where, interesting, could be, might be, could be, it's black and white for Dan. And people latch onto that and say, but Dan said it was all shit. It's all a scam. And I believe Dan because I just don't have space in my brain to think for myself. So I'm not going to. And that's it.
Yeah, I think like that is happening. But most people just don't have time in their lives to work all this stuff out, which is fine. I think what will happen is, it's a shame, it's probably just too early. Like, this will happen again, there'll be another thing, and then there'll be something really cool that happens, you know, that has blockchain in, but everybody kind of ignores it because it's really cool and they want to be involved or whatever. And then it'll change, and then this kind of thing will work really well. But yeah, it's a bit of a shame, but it's worth paying attention to still, I think, because I wonder if it will come back in a new form.
I also think we are possibly at the end of the Mr. Beast period of YouTube. I think Mr. Beast is topped. I've been thinking this for a while, but like, you know, I just see signs that there is an exhaustion with that. And like, he can keep kind of pushing the boundaries as high as he can, but there comes a limit. Like, at a certain point, like, what can Mr. Beast, what can Jimmy Donaldson do that he hasn't already done? And how can he up himself? And the answer is, he just keeps spending money, and at a certain point that becomes unsustainable. There is a huge backlash. Jacksepticeye was in the news this week because he very publicly called out Mr. Beast for ruining YouTube, basically. Him and Tommy Innit, who's a, you know, a massive Minecraft YouTuber, the clip went viral. It's I think Mr. Beast was quite triggered by it, and he put out a sort of heartfelt tweet replying to this. But there's definitely, you know, it's a real sense that Jimmy is not kind of the superhero that everyone thinks he is, and that there's a backlash. And I don't think that's really justified, because he's just grinding and working as hard as he possibly can in the thing that he knows how to do, taking it to the max. But apparently they made it up, and apparently it's all Gucci now, and I sympathize.
All right, final story that we mentioned was the rumor that Nintendo are working on a VR headset, which is kind of cool. Now, this is from a reliable Nintendo source, who Nash Weedle is their name, who is online and has been the source with past accurate leaks on Nintendo stuff. Apparently has been talking about a potential prototype VR headset. Now, apparently it might be partnered with Google on their VR headset, and it won't be an accessory for the Switch, but its own thing. Obviously, this is all just rumors at the moment. Google, interestingly, had an XR headset project which was abandoned. Samsung also had one which was delayed. Nintendo's collaboration could be Google's avenue to introduce potentially a mixed reality operating system, as Apple have obviously done. Also, Google acquired a company called Raxium, which Nintendo are apparently testing their displays with. So there seems to be some genuine connection going on here. A standalone device for home, not for theme parks or anything like that. There has been some funny Nintendo VR stuff from the past. So there was something, I don't know if you remember. I remember when I read the story, I remember it really vaguely, but in 1995, there was Virtual Boy 3D goggles, which wasn't a VR headset by any means, but it was like a cardboard thing that you looked into that could vaguely make stuff a bit more immersive. There was also all the Nintendo Labo, I think, VR kit stuff, which added some VR capabilities to the Switch, but again, was like very basic. The second generation Switch is expected to release in 2024, and so that's going to be their focus. So it seems like this is a way off. Who knows if it's definitely true, but kind of interesting. And yeah, slowly it's coming. They're all coming, which is interesting to read. So it's only really a rumor at this stage. I'll link the story below, but kind of cool to see that they might be getting involved. And I think it would really suit Nintendo as well.
I've just been Googling the Virtual Boy because I did not know about this thing. I want it. There's such a rich, interesting history to these headsets. I watched Jurassic Park again just recently, and you know, when was that? 1994, I think it is. But like, there's a whole bit in there where they're talking about how they understand the DNA and everything, and they've got this guy with virtual reality, and we use virtual reality. It's like the worst headset you've ever seen. It's just like, this shit's been around for a really long time, and it's just not, it's a failure to launch. I've been researching a company called Meta 2 and a product called the Meta 2, which is actually an AR headset that kind of was going to be this big new thing. It was basically the Vision Pro before the Vision Pro, and it just didn't take off. That was like 2018. This was like the grand promise of AR. It was the first time that it actually delivered an AR experience that really blew people's minds, and they just couldn't make it work. It's a bit like Magic Leap. Was it Magic Leap? There's a whole film about the founding of it. General Magic. That's it. General Magic. So like, General Magic came up with the iPhone before the iPhone, and it was around like 1989. Can you imagine? And they basically built what would be an iPhone, and then it was just too early. And it feels like, you know, so many of these VR experiments have been that. And then, you know, Apple doing what they do, they just wait and wait and wait until the moment is right, the moment is ready. And then I find myself getting really excited about it again. I think it's just kind of cycles of interest in technology. I've got to shout out Somnium and their VR1 headset, because they are like our friend Arthur, who was on the show when we were kind of looking at the Vision Pro when it came out. We should definitely get him back on to talk about where they're at with VR and where things are going, because, you know, they're building this headset, and it's really hard to build a headset. And this is an indie headset, and still the production costs, the actual realities of building these things. It's fascinating. And we've been jamming all week on this. We are basically gearing up for a world record attempt in VR, which will be coming up in October. So I'm now getting sort of my head back into the VR space. I spent 9.5 hours in a Meta Quest Pro, and I'm not sure I could have spent a lot more time in it, but that's pretty intense. We're looking at the Lynx R1, which is a mixed reality AR headset, really awesome product from France. So that's going to be, I think, our kind of device for the attempt. But I'm looking at like over 2 days in VR nonstop, which is going to be, that's going to be quite a thing. And I don't really know what that does to you physically or mentally as well. So there's going to be quite a lot of interesting things for us to figure out. But like we started talking about the Nintendo VR headset. My God, that makes so much sense, right? Doesn't it? There's no competitors for the Switch. They always make these products where there kind of isn't a competitor. I do remember there being like the Sega Lynx and a few other crappy handhelds, but the Game Boy pretty much went uncontested. It was just the thing, and there is no contender for the Switch. There is no contender for the Wii. They just are in their own strange little category, and they do really well at that. And that's kind of Nintendo superpower. So if they've got a headset, yeah, they make really interesting products. So it makes a lot of sense for me.
That feels like, if we're talking about timing, that Nintendo would be perfectly match for that, because they've always sort of anchored themselves to gameplay over it being graphically, the like fidelity of the graphics being the key thing that they're selling on, like fun motion games. Like the Wii was great for that, wasn't it? And that's kind of roughly where we are with it. It'll be interesting to see how that pans out. And Vision Pro, I think, is slated for Q1 of 2024.
It's coming real fast, yeah.
It will be interesting. We're going to see some cool videos, stuff that people... I've already seen some like mock-ups of stuff that people have made for unofficial stuff with the developer kits or whatever. But, and yeah, that'll be nice to see. There'll be some cool stuff that will go viral.
You know what? I'm like Tim Sweeney's always up in Tim Cook's grill because he hates the way Apple does things. Weird enough, though, like I have found myself after like 3 or 4 years of like just being annoyed by Apple and the cost of the products and everything else, and using PCs to edit everything, we finally got to the end of the road with the Adobe suite. Like Premiere as an editing tool is so bad now that it's actually costing us money, like literally costing money, because we can't get stuff edited anymore. So we're thinking of moving to DaVinci Resolve completely, but that just works so much better on Macs than it does on PCs. And like, now we're looking at, you know, M2 Studios and these kind of things. I'm like, am I going back to Apple? Feels like it's kind of calling me back. It's really weird. I wasn't expecting that. I thought we were like, yeah, we're going to go, like, value prop on PCs is much better. But no, I was like, oh, actually, you know, maybe the best tool. Oh, God. I spent so much of my career on Mac. And then like, oh, yeah, feels kind of familiar and right. Maybe the Vision Pro. Maybe I'll just be an Apple fanboy again. Like Marquez. You know what I mean?
It's coming back. Interesting. Yeah, well, we'll keep you all updated on what happens, of course, but I think that's probably the pods.
Well, we should give a shout out to the Futureverse and Emergence SDK, Open Meta. Like, if we're going to be honest, like, the Open Metaverse is the way this space thrives, the way this space moves forward in a way that's interesting and actually free and open. And I was really excited to see that the Emergence SDK, which allows NFTs and IP to be plugged into worlds in a very interoperable way, has been released. They had a big kind of announcement yesterday. I think this deserves its own kind of big segment. So sorry we haven't been able to cover it today, but we'll definitely do it next time we chat, because that ecosystem and what they're building there is starting to take shape into something that genuinely, I think, it has a lot of the boxes ticked and has a lot of things covered that anybody looking to really build into kind of Web3 and Web2 and interoperability and IP and all the good things that this space can offer, you got to take a look at it. That's for sure.
Yeah, something to dive into maybe on another episode. But I'll link a cool story. They did a good demo where they're using AI to generate images and then bring them into as 3D assets into worlds and have them working, which is pretty phenomenal. So I'll link that to check out, but we'll dive into it on another episode. But yeah, that's probably it for today. Peace.
That was the pod.